Susie Jones is taking yet another day of vacation. She has asked me, Denny Long, to fill in for her. She will be back next week, and that is a promise from Susie Jones. Nice to have you with us this morning. In a few minutes or so, we are going to have our longtime friend Dr. David Hilden on to answer any questions you may have when it comes to your health. But first, we're introducing a new piece to this health show. In this first segment, we call this one The Weekly Dose.
No side effects, just the latest headlines, breakthroughs, and a little wellness wisdom to keep you in the know. Let's do The Weekly Dose on Health Radio.
Well, this week, a Consumer Reports investigation found some protein powders and shakes contain unsafe levels of lead. The Food and Drug Administration also recently identified four additional makers of ground cinnamon that contain elevated levels of lead, making a total of 16 labels having a concerning amount of lead. For more on this, here's Sana Mojahid of Consumer Reports, who sat down with CBS News' Nancy Chen to discuss some of these findings.
To talk more about all this, so Sana Mojahid joins us now. She's the manager of food safety research and testing at Consumer Reports. Thank you very much for joining us to talk about this, because this study really has raised quite a few eyebrows. So many people consume, whether it's protein shakes, protein powder, it's such a big part of everyone's lives. How concerned should people be for their health if they use these products?
Yeah, they are so popular, and that's one of the reasons we tested it. But people shouldn't panic. You know, even in our article, most of the products that we tested, we provide serving limits for that people can use per week or per day. There are only two products that we say should be avoided, and those two were over 1,000% of our level of concern. So don't panic, but just be aware that you are being exposed to significant amounts of lead through these products.
Well, I was going to say, and also the fact is that it's repeated use, too, right? I mean, you hear some of these companies saying that lead is naturally occurring, but what does long-term lead exposure do to someone's body?
Yes, that's correct. Like, it's not only used as an occasional treat, like chocolate or boba tea that we have also tested. These products are used daily by people and sometimes multiple times a day. And considering that you're also exposed to lead through other sources in your diet and your environment, you know, you should try to lower your exposure wherever you can.
One thing that stood out to me here is the products with the most lead, they were all vegan plant-based powders, which is surprising for some people. Why is that?
We did find that the plant-based powders that we tested were 9 times higher in lead than our dairy-based products and like 2 times higher than our beef-based ones. And it may just be due to this, the source of the protein. You know, plants are more susceptible to uptaking lead and other contaminants from the soil that they're grown in, the water that's used to irrigate them. And then obviously all of these products go through a manufacturing process that can also lead to contamination.
And Sana, here we go with the last question for you. Does the federal government monitor for lead in protein powders?
No, they don't. There are no enforceable standards for lead in protein powders, and supplements in general are not well regulated. So we do think that enforceable standards will hold the industry more accountable and eventually lead to less exposure for consumers.
That's CBS's Nancy Chen. So many people struggle with infertility, and affording treatments like IVF to start a family of their own was one of the big health stories this week. It was a deal with the Trump administration that had made to provide a more affordable cost to some of these treatments. Well, on Friday, Arvanita Sarkar chatted with a blogger who experienced these struggles, but with the help of IVF, was able to start a family of her own. Here is Arvanita Sarkar on the morning news talking to Katie Warner about what access to IVF did to change her life and, with hopes, bring change to many others going forward.
It is a big deal for the people who struggle with getting pregnant. IVF gives them hope, but it costs so much money, thousands of dollars. Now President Trump announcing a deal with a pharmaceutical company that's going to reduce the cost of some of those fertility medications. Joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Katie Warner, who has her own IVF story. And I want to hear your story, Katie, first before we get to President Trump's announcement. What was your story and your IVF journey and the costs involved?
Hi there. Yeah, thank you so much for having me this morning. Yeah, we experienced infertility for several years. My husband and I trying to get pregnant and grow our family. And we did go through four rounds of IVF, which is, speaking on the, you know, financial strain, cost is definitely the primary barrier to IVF. And so we did three rounds of IVF out of pocket. And then on our last round, we actually had health insurance coverage. So it was like finding $30,000 on the sidewalk, you know. it's just, you know, it's, we have two beautiful girls because of IVF. And I, you know, having financial freedom, I guess, to access the medicine at a less expensive rate definitely gives a lot more couples experience infertility hope. So I think it's wonderful. It's a step in the right direction.
How old are your girls now?
We have a 2.5-year-old and then an she just turned one in August.
Oh. So you got a busy house.
It took us 4 years to have so it took us 4 years to have our first daughter. And so we kind of jumped right back into IVF right after we got pregnant. So, and then we were successful on that, on the fourth round. So
that's huge, because you just think about the ups and downs of this journey for so many families. And when cost is a barrier, it becomes who has the ability to pay and who doesn't. President Trump announced this deal yesterday, which really will open the door to more people accessing IVF. And for you, you can tell it made a huge difference to you. What do you feel for all those people who've been struggling and just haven't been able to pay for this?
Yeah, my heart just goes out to people who are experiencing infertility in general. And then also, you know, with the financial impact, just compounding the situation, like infertility is hard enough to go through. It can feel very isolating and lonely, and sort of like you look around you and everyone else is getting pregnant and growing their families, and then you're over here, you know, trying cycle after cycle and with no success. So I just feel like this provides a lot of hope for families, and just that it's, yeah, like I said, hopefully it's a step in the right direction toward increased access for everybody.
Well, I'm glad it's worked out so well for you. You enjoy those girls. I'm sure they're keeping you both very busy. We appreciate you sharing your story, and glad now that it's going to be easier for others as we move forward.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Katie Warner sharing her IVF story.
Thanks to Vanita Sarkar for that. Well, here we are, well into the month of October, which means flu season right around the corner. And CBS Health Watch spoke to Dr. Mark Montana, a medical director with Care Now Urgent Care, discussing the timing of when we can see cases, when we should get a flu shot, and how do we know it's not different from COVID or the common cold?
Peak flu season is almost here. What are you seeing now, and how can people prepare?
Yeah, well, really good question. And what we're seeing is some low-level influenza. So influenza does not go away. It is with us year-round, but usually the levels are so low that we really don't notice it. Over the next 2 to 6 weeks, we're going to start to see that rise. We're going to really get into that flu season. And the thing you can do now, the best thing you can do right now, is to get your flu shot early. It takes about 2 weeks to become fully immunized after the shot. So this is a perfect time to get the shot. It should last you through most of the flu season, which can go through March and April.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about that shot. Who should get that shot, and maybe what can they expect in terms of things to expect after that?
Well, we recommend the flu shot for anybody from 6 months old and on. So really, anybody who's over 6 months should get the flu shot. Some of the things you might expect, you might get a little soreness at the site. Sometimes you will get some achiness, some headaches, some things that you might say, oh, am I coming down with something? You're not. It's just body's reacting and making an immune response so that when you are exposed to the flu in the future, you're well protected.
So how can we tell the difference between the flu, COVID, and maybe even a common cold?
Boy, they are all so similar. The common cold usually doesn't come with fevers. If it does, they're very low grade. They don't last long. Influenza can have high fevers, and they tend to last 2 to 3 days. COVID can show up, I always joke, COVID shows up how it wants, but it does have runny nose, cough, congestion, body aches, and some fevers, so they are very similar. The best thing is to get to your urgent care, your primary care provider, and be tested, because we don't know which one you might have. Some of these have to be treated really early in the course. Influenza, we want to see you within 2 days to start the treatment. It's an antiviral, not an antibiotic, an antiviral, which will help you get better sooner, and really it helps reduce some of those symptoms.
I'm sure there's one of the many things we'll be talking about coming up in just moments when our guest, Dr. David Hilden, answers any kind of a healthcare question you may have. Call us or text us, whichever's easier, 651-461-9226. Our Health Hour continues here, News Talk 830 WCCO. It's a Sunday morning when we talk health here in 830 WCCO. Susie Jones taking the day off today. She'll be back next week. Denny Long filling in. As promised, our longtime friend and guest and expert, I can call you an expert because you are. You indeed are one of the scientists we love to have on this radio station. Dr. David Hilden, who is an internal medicine physician at Hennepin Healthcare here in the Twin Cities. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Denny, and good morning, listeners. I appreciate the kind words early on a Sunday morning.
And I was thinking about rock stars when they request or demand a certain kind of M&Ms or certain sandwiches in the dressing room. In my contract, I have, when I'm on, Dr. Hilden has to be on. if that were only true. But it's good to have you here, and people are anxiously awaiting to ask you questions. Let's kind of back up on that last story about the flu shot. I just got mine like last week at one of the Hennepin clinics. And I was asking the nurse, now is this, what do they call it, a quadrivalent? She, no, this is, I think she said a trivalent. Is that kind of just changed for this year?
Yeah, they change it around year to year. I'll be perfectly honest, I'm not exactly sure which one is in the flu shot this year. You know, the flu is kind of a funny thing. First of all, you don't want to get it. I'll tell you that right now. You don't want to get the flu, if you can help it. but they have to sort of predict what the strains are going to be, because although flu is a type of virus, it has loads of little subtypes, and viruses aren't exactly very complex organisms, but they do tend to mutate a lot. And so what they do is they predict what happened in the southern hemisphere, basically. So they, you know, what's going on in Australia, because their summers and winters are reversed from ours, and they make some predictions about what was there, and they make some predictions about what happened last year, and they do their best to get 3 or 4 strains in. And so I'm not exactly sure which one they have in this year's. That's a really good question. I should probably find that out. But in any case, the one thing I do recommend, if you are over age 65, that you get the higher dose one. There's a low dose, well, not low. There's the usual dose and the one that they boost it just a teeny bit, because older adults, your immune system isn't quite as robust as it was when you were 25. And so giving you just a little extra added boost in that shot is typically what is done. So I do recommend doing that, getting the higher dose one if you're over 65. But if you don't, if the place you go to only has one of them, get whatever they have, because the difference among the various shots isn't so important. The big difference is whether or not you got it in the first place. So just get whatever they had.
We'll get on to other topics, but at home last night we were again discussing, and I've seen ads, TV ads, radio ads, about the RSV, and I'm thinking, gee, should I get that? I'm what they might call a mature adult. What's the deal with that particular shot?
Well, we'll be the judge of that, Denny, about whether you're a mature adult. I know that's a whole nother hour.
Yeah, you're right. We'll get another doctor's opinion on that.
We'll have to get a second opinion. I'm kidding you. No, the RSV is another virus, respiratory syncytial virus, which is not so easy to say on a Sunday morning. But RSV has been around forever. We've known about it in little babies, especially babies, for many, many years. But it's only recently that we finally got a vaccine for older adults, because it also affects older adults. There's not a ton of 40-year-olds getting RSV, but there are a ton of babies, and there are, frankly, quite a large number of older adults. So if you are over 75, I do strongly recommend you get your RSV shot. It's just a one-time shot. in your lifetime, at least in the way it is currently made. You get it once, you don't get it every year. If you are younger than 75, like say over 60, and you have other healthcare issues, you might want to consider getting it as well. But really, you should consider it when you get to 75. I would strongly recommend you ask your doctor or your pharmacy to get your RSV shot. You can do it the same time as you do the flu shot if you want.
Excellent. I'm thinking about a COVID shot next week.
Yeah, that one is, again, we always recommend that as well. You know, people say, gosh, you're sticking me all these times. Yeah. Well, I got three vaccines at one time once, and I had a sore arm. I didn't feel so great that evening or the next day, but that is because your body is practicing. You're not getting those diseases. They are different diseases. Your immune system can handle it. People say, well, oh, you're just taxing my, that's too much to give my immune system. Oh, no. Your immune system is bombarded. It's being carpet bombed all day long by things, and your immune system responds to all of them. Adding three other ones in your arm isn't going to hurt that. And so your body can take care of that. But you will feel a little punky after you get your vaccines, especially the COVID one. You might get a little, you might not feel so great for a day or two. It's a small price to pay for not ending up in the hospital with COVID.
But get it. All right. I'm looking at an interesting text, and I think an important one. A texter says, I was just diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. It is scary. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's probably what I see the most in clinic after maybe blood pressure, high blood pressure, would be diabetes. The vast majority of diabetes is type 2, perhaps 90, 95%. Type 1 is what they used to call insulin dependent or juvenile. And that is when your pancreas simply doesn't make insulin. And that's a different disease, frankly. Type 2 diabetes is that your body does make insulin, but it doesn't use it very efficiently. And insulin is required for life. We require that. And so your body's got all this insulin, but it doesn't work. It's resistant to its effects. So blood sugars, otherwise known as glucose is the simplest form of sugar, forms in your bloodstream, gets higher, and those high blood sugar levels affect so many things. It affects the little blood vessels to your nerves, so you get numbness and neuropathy. It affects little blood vessels to your kidneys, so you get kidney disease. It affects little blood vessels in your eyeballs, so you get a retinal disease. And then it leads to risk of heart disease and all that. But to this listener, there's hope. In fact, there's more than hope. This is treatable. It's not curable, but it's treatable. And the first things you should do to treat it are watch your diet. Avoid simple carbohydrates. Whatever you do, we should all do this. Avoid ultra-processed foods. There's almost no redeeming quality other than convenience for ultra-processed foods. Exercise. Maintain a healthy weight. Probably the thing you could do the most if you're carrying extra weight is drop 5, 10, 15, 20 pounds. That will make your diabetes better. And then there's plenty of medications to treat it. So get a good primary care doctor. You don't need to go over to an endocrinologist right away. Just go to a primary care doctor. They can help you out with all of that. They do it every single day. So there's plenty to be optimistic about, listeners, because it'll be okay.
Good news. Hang on, Dr. Hilden, please. For those just joining us, Dr. David Hilden, internal medicine physician with Hennepin Healthcare, answering those questions. And Dr. Hilden will be with us the remainder of the hour. So by all means, call us or text us with your health question for Dr. Hilden, 651-461-9226. Denny and for Susie here. News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And welcome back to our Health Hour. Denny Long filling in for the vacationing Susie Jones. She will be back next Sunday morning. If you're just joining us, our guest this morning, Dr. David Hilden, internal medicine physician at Hennepin Healthcare, answering those healthcare questions. And, of course, Dr. Hilden, we have many to keep you busy for the rest of the show. Again, here is our phone number. It also happens to be the text number, 651-461-9226. Texter says, Doctor, how do I stop the severe constipation I have? I bet you get that in clinic a lot.
Oh, you and about 8 zillion other people. So, listener, you are not alone. And frankly, you'd think that that would be no big deal. Well, it is. It is one of the basic functions of the human animal. And if you are not having a regular sort of normal-ish bowel movement, it's a problem. So first thing to do is look at your diet. make sure you're getting plenty of fluids. And by fluids, I mean water. Drink a lot of water. Drink, maybe increase a little bit more water. The second thing is, are you moving? It's good to have your body exercising and moving. Third thing, what does your diet look like in terms of the food? Is it ultra-processed foods? Is it a lot of sugars? You need to bulk it up with fiber and protein and healthy whole foods if you can. And then if that doesn't work, what I tell people to do is there are over-the-counter, very gentle remedies. Some of them are fiber supplements if you're not getting enough in your diet. Some of them are very mild laxatives. There's one called Senacot. That's a brand name. So Senna is a gentle laxative. Take one of those every day. And then if you could do it every day. You could take one of those every day. You could take two every day if you need to. And then if you go more than a day, I'm saying if you're like on your second day and nothing's happening, I would use a little stronger one. Use something like Miralax, which you can also get at a drugstore. And that's a powder you put in a glass of water. And then if none of these things are working, go to your physician or your primary care clinician, and they can prescribe you something that's stronger. There's always a way. We joke, and probably shouldn't joke about it, but we can blast you out with something if we need to. But those are harsh, and you don't want to be doing some of the prescription things unless you really need to.
Well, as long as we're in the vicinity, I'm looking at a text that followed that one from another listener, and this listener wants to know, what are the treatments for hemorrhoids or fissures?
Yeah, it does. The question two relates to question one. Most of your hemorrhoid is just a vein. You know, you got veins all over your body, including right down by your rectum area, and those veins can get engorged and they can swell up because the blood in your veins is moving slowly. It's moving like a lazy river, whereas in your arteries, it's pulsating like it's shooting around your body. It's just lazily moving through your veins. Well, if the pressure builds up in those veins, they get bigger and bigger and engorged. And that's what a hemorrhoid is if it happens to the vein around your bottom. And constipation and straining can lead to that. So they can even get so bad where they hurt, they get painful, and they can even pop a little bit, and then you're bleeding into the toilet. So what we say is keep your bowels regular, a little wee bit on the loose side so you don't have to strain if you can. And then you can dab a little bit of hydrocortisone, which you can also get at a drugstore, on your bottom after you clean yourself up, and that might help a little bit. But if it doesn't get better, go to your doctor, and there's some remedies that they can do as well, all the way to cutting them out. Although only just a few people need to have that done. There's some other stronger medications and things that they can try to give you some relief.
Here's another question, doctor, about shots. This one I think is a good one, too. Is the pneumonia vaccine a one and done, and at what age should a person receive it?
Yeah, if you're 50 years old, 50, that's what the new recommendations are for your pneumonia shot. Currently, it's a one and done. It has a brand name. It's called Prevnar 20. 20 is just how many strains they have in it. They might even be up to 21 by now. They keep adding strains to it, and you might think, well, why is that so important? Well, just get it your first time, and you're probably okay. But if you got it younger in life, like in your 50s or 60s, the protection probably does wane. So when they do come out with the next one, I would get it. I've done that personally. I've got the Prevnar 20, which is the current latest and greatest, or at least it has been the last few years. So I would recommend that one shot for everybody over age 50. If you're not anxious to get shots at 50, it's probably okay to wait because the recommendations used to be 60. It's okay. But sometime in your 50s and 60s, and certainly if you're over age 65, please do get your pneumonia vaccine. It remains in the top 10 causes of mortality or death in our country. At least I think it still does. Pneumonia is something that you don't want to mess with when you're an older adult.
I heard some discussion, and I can't remember where it was, about if you had the pneumonia shot years ago, and I think I did. I don't have a record of it. And this person said, well, you can get the new one.
Yep, that's a true statement. The older ones they were good for the technology and the science that existed at the time. They've been updated. And no, you can't get pneumonia from the shot. So if you got a pneumonia shot at any in the past years, especially if it was 5 or 10 years ago, I'd strongly recommend you get the updated one. You don't have to rush off, get it right this afternoon, but I would do it at your next checkup.
And again, you mentioned it earlier, and we'll go on to other topics besides inoculations, but it's okay, a bunch of these texts, get the flu shot, COVID shot, all of these at the same time, and you said, yeah.
It is. You can have a sore arm. You know, the flu shot, I've never had a sore arm for that, but some people do. But some of these shots give you a little sore arm. If you get your tetanus shot, for instance, that one always hurts. If you get your COVID, you might have a sore arm. But yes, you can get more than one at once.
Big question, could surgery be a solution for a weak arthritic back?
It could be, but it's not your first choice. In other words, try everything else first. But if you have real bad spinal issues and deformities, or you've got compression fractures and you're kind of hunched over, you know, you're getting shorter in your life because your spine is getting smaller, you know, you're literally shrinking in height, that's arthritis that is affecting your spine. And there are some surgeries, but we reserve surgery for if the pain you're experiencing and the limitations in your life are so bad that sometimes they can do fusion surgeries and the like. But that is not a typical treatment for arthritis of the back. It's more physical therapy, exercise, other things to help you out. Back pain is very, very common. And so the thing I would strongly recommend for every person listening, as you are able, we all have different abilities, what we can do is to exercise and stretch and strengthen our bodies. That's very important.
Very good. I'm looking at another text. By the way, if you're just joining us, Dr. David Hilden, internal medicine physician at Hennepin Healthcare, answering those questions on CCO this morning. Glad to have Dr. Hilden back on the radio. Question via text is CoQ10 enzyme helpful if you're taking a statin?
It might be. I have some practitioners that I respect who are wiser than I about lipids or cholesterol who do prescribe it to their patients. That being said, it is not a scientifically proven thing to do. I don't know of a ton of downsides to it, but the main thing is the statin. And not everybody needs to be on a statin, but if your doctor or other clinician recommends it, I would for sure start with that. Don't just use coenzyme Q10 or anything else. It is one of the few things in medicine that have extremely strong evidence. And when I say strong evidence, it means we kind of know this one. Statins do reduce risk for heart problems in the right patients. The guidelines have changed a little bit, but there are a certain groups of people that are at higher risk for whom a statin is very important. And if you want to add a little extra protection, I don't think there's a real downside to coenzyme Q10. I just don't think it should be your first thing that you look to do.
I was looking at a text, Doctor, about your A1C. The question is, do you think a cup of watermelon or pineapple affect your A1C since it has some sugar?
Yeah, well, anything with sugar, one or two servings of anything isn't going to do a whole lot, but it's more your whole diet over time. Your A1C is a shorthand for glycosylated hemoglobin. Your sugars they kind of latch onto your hemoglobin in your body, like little barnacles that are hanging on to your hemoglobin, and it's being carried around your body. The A1C is simply a measure of the saturation of hemoglobin that has sugar attached to it. Something under 6.5% is what you're after. Over that is diabetes. But it's an average over 3 months because that's how long a red blood cell lives, 120 days. Your body makes a couple million red blood cells every single day. And then a couple million die every single day. And so it's an average over those 120 days. So one cup of watermelon or watermelon juice or pineapple juice isn't going to affect the A1C itself. But if you're drinking and eating a lot of sugars in your day, over time, yes, that will have an adverse or bad effect on your glycemic control or your A1C.
We're up against the clock to take a little break. As we head into the break, I wanted to ask you how serious this is, and we're all hearing about it and seeing the television stories about the possibility of a lot of hospitals, rural and metro, possibility of closing. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, if you will, and I didn't want to hit you up with any political dialogue.
Let's have time before the break, Danny?
Now, let's do that after. Let's take this break. Again, Dr. David Hilden with us here on WCCO. Susie Jones will be back next week, by the way. Nice day today. 43 is the current temp. We are heading to a high of about 59, lots of sunshine. Stay with us. News Talk 830 WCCO. Good Sunday morning to you. Denny Long filling in for the vacationing Susie Jones, who will return next Sunday morning. If you are just joining us, Dr. David Hilden is back with us, internal medicine physician at Hennepin Healthcare, answering those questions. And Dr. Hilden, before the break, I wanted to ask you about, you know, just how much in danger are we? We hear the stories about our hospitals and other facilities, the possibility of closing down, which is kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah, healthcare financing is really complicated in this country, regardless of what your political views are. It's just complicated. And you know, we have a lot of different players. And one of the issues is that the people delivering the care, guys like me and hospitals like mine and rural hospitals in Benson and Wilmer and all over in Bemidji, you know, those they're the ones delivering care, and we could set the price at $1 million a visit, and we, you know, it doesn't matter what the price is. It doesn't matter what we send it at. It's we get paid what the payers want to pay us. So there's the person paying the bill is paying the person delivering the service, and the person in the middle is you, the patient, and you're kind of left out of it all, which is kind of a funny system when you think about it. Well, our payers don't pay enough to cover the cost of delivering that care, so we operate at a loss. So if you imagine your local burger joint loses money every time you buy a burger, and yet they're required to give you that burger, it's a hard business. So it's complicated. No one's at fault and everyone's at fault. But what I do suggest you do is your local hospitals are not making enough money to stay open in rural areas. That's the biggest place, smaller communities. The metro area is, they're doing okay. They're doing okay. The one exception to where they're doing okay is my own hospital. Hennepin Healthcare, otherwise known as Hennepin County Medical Center, is in financial straits. We provide by far and away the most care for which people don't pay the bill. So that one is really, really concerning to me. So I don't know what happens in 2027. Cuts to Medicaid are catastrophic to our organization. It's not hyperbole there. It'll be catastrophic, the cuts to Medicaid. And work requirements for Medicaid do not work. They are simply a way to get people to lose their health care insurance. So some of the things that are coming in 2027 are really not good. So I just encourage you to stay engaged. Have your own, whatever your own political views are, to stay engaged and learn about health care, especially if you live in a rural community, and especially if you care about the state of Minnesota. And I would ask you to contact your legislative officials, your elected officials, and support for Medicaid, for public health programs, and for safety net hospitals like Hennepin Healthcare.
Excellent. Let's grab a phone call. Dr. John, I believe, is calling from Florida, I think originally from Minneapolis. John, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So the situation is I had cancer 16 years ago. I had my saliva gland removed, and I thought I was good to go. And then 5 years ago, it came back in my sinus region, and they couldn't do radiation or they couldn't do surgery because my artery had gone through it. So I did some radiation chemotherapy, and I think I'm doing good overall. And I just went to the Mayo for a checkup this past summer. But the past couple months, I've had what they call phantom smells, where I'll have this chemical smell for about 10 seconds, and it'll be gone. I don't feel dizzy. I don't feel lightheaded, nothing like that. But they seem to be happening more and more, and they said, well, it does appear that there's a lesion on the lower part of your brain, but that was to be expected. We knew that that was going to happen when we did your radiation the second time. And I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of that phantom smells with a situation like this.
Thank you for calling, John. I'm sorry about the long haul with you. No, I am not an expert in that. It's a fairly specific type of cancer. But what you're experiencing, I can just give you my general thoughts on it. You had the salivary gland cancer isn't that uncommon. That one I do see every now and then. But the going into your sinuses are holes in your head. They're holes in your skull. And you've got cancerous cells in places that are right next to your central nervous system. Your brain, the nerves coming out of your brain, and one of the nerves coming out of your brain is what's called the first cranial nerve. There are 12 main nerves that come to your brain. Number one is the olfactory nerve, or your smelling one. It leads to your sense of smell. My speculation, and I'm going to caution this is speculation, is that that chemotherapy and radiation has damaged that nerve. Sort of like a person who had your leg amputated, you still feel the foot that is no longer there. That's phantom nerve pain. Somehow or other, that nerve has been damaged to the point where it's playing tricks on you, and you have this changed sense of smell. I'm glad you're going to my good friends at the Mayo. I always talk about Hennepin Healthcare, but I got loads of friends at the Mayo in all three locations, Florida, Scottsdale, Arizona, and Rochester, Minnesota. And find the specialist in head and neck cancers, which I'm sure you already have. But I guess I can't give you more information than that, other than to say it makes biological sense that that might have happened to you. I'm sorry that's happened to you. But see if they have anything that they can do about that. I probably shouldn't say more than that, because now I'm just really speculating. But really, I wish you all the best, John.
We're down to about our last 3 minutes, Doctor, and I'm looking at a text that's a big topic. Atrial fibrillation, a texter says he or she has. They take a couple of pills. One is a calcium channel blocker, I believe, and a blood thinner. The question is there anything else I can do to prevent a rapid heartbeat? Also, what causes atrial fibrillation? Well, there's
right.
a question.
Super common. I was getting ahead of myself. Atrial fibrillation is the upper chambers of your heart are called the atria. Singular is atrium. You have two of them, a right one and a left one. Your heart has an intrinsic pacemaker, something that makes it beat regularly for your whole life. Da-dump, 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 in a nice regular rhythm. That happens in your atria. That's where it starts. Sometimes the electrical system of your heart gets a little wonky and it starts to quiver. And instead of going regularly, it just randomly fires from a variety of places in your atria. And so it quivers. You can do okay with a quivering atrium, but you'd rather not have that. It does lead you to a little higher risk of having a stroke, hence the blood thinners. So what can you do about it? You can keep your heart rate slow with things called beta blockers and calcium channel blockers. You're on one of those two. And there's another thing you can do. There's a thing called ablation. When I started the radio show with you, Denny, in 2009, mm-hmm. I would have said, don't be getting atrial fibrillations ablated. It doesn't work very well. That has changed in 16 years. There are ablations for atrial fibrillation that work and make it go away. They don't work every single time, but they're pretty effective. So you might want to talk to an electrophysiologist, a heart doctor, the electrician of the heart. Is an electrophysiologist. That's a cardiologist who specializes in atrial fibrillation. Go see them, see if they can't ablate it. But if not, there are ways to keep your heart rate slow. The electrician of the heart are wonderful people. I can't believe they do what they do, but your heart is it's a chemical thing, it's an electrical thing, and it's a mechanical pump. So you want to see the electrician of the heart, an electrophysiologist.
Just talked to a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago who had the ablation done many years ago. And it worked for a while, but then didn't. And then had that, what you referred to as that newer procedure, bada bing.
Exactly. It's a shorter procedure. It's safer. It's called pulse field ablation. We do it right down at Hennepin County Medical Center, as well as probably your heart center. It's something to look into. It has now been shown with the latest science to be pretty dang effective. So I would consider ablation of your atrial fibrillation. You don't have to, but it's something to consider.
In the last few seconds, Dr. Hill, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to join us Sunday. I know you're a busy guy. But again, for those that missed the earlier part, get the flu shot, get the COVID shot, get the pneumonia shot if you haven't, and the RSV.
You got it, Denny. All kinds of needles to put in your arms. It's been great hanging out with you again on a Sunday morning.
All right. Take care of yourself, David. Thank you so much. Dr. David Hilden with us, internal medicine physician at Hennepin Healthcare. Again, always great to have Dr. Hilden on the radio. Susie will be back next Sunday morning. She promised us that. Going to be a nice day today. Hope you enjoy it. Sunny skies are expected later today. We're going to get up to about 59 degrees, 43 the low. Chance of showers tomorrow. We'll get you more weather details as we move through the morning here. Bruce and Peg, next hour, 830 WCCO.